Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Hugs from Heaven. That's Hugs with a Z at the end, and they can be found on the web at www.hugsfromheaven.com. Our guest tonight is Dr. Jane Katra, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6. So, Bob, what's new with you today?
Well, working as usual, as I know you were, and I know that this past weekend we had an event in New Jersey with the certified medium Janet Nohavik, and I'd like to thank her for that. It was a very good event, and she was gave out a lot of very evidential information, as she normally does. And, you know, during this event, I was talking a little bit about dream visits, and a woman came up to me at the end of the program, and soft-spoken, older, you know, woman, and she looked troubled, and she was relating to me how she has these dreams where she sees people die. And
she witnesses their death of people that she knows are living.
Right.
Okay.
And she was having a hard time assimilating that, and you could see that she was somewhat troubled by it. And it wasn't a vague thing, you know, like somebody's going to die. She would know who, you know, and it's happened, you know, many times. And the most perplexing part is what to do once she got that information. Do you go to that person?
Has the person died? Have the people in her dream died?
They always do.
They always do.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, she knows that she gets the dream that they're going to die, an imminent thing, and they die. So, and this is the first time we've heard this. I know that one or two mediums that we work with have told us that they get that, and I know that I've come across other people that mention it. But she raises an interesting question, you know, what do you do with the information? I know her daughter was there with her, and her daughter said, well, I think you have to, tell the people, because then maybe they could change the course of events, you know, like, let's say it was an accident or...
Well, if she sees it as an accident, yeah, then it's a warning.
Right.
But if somebody is dying of a disease,
what do you, yeah,
I just think it's unethical to go to them and just say, oh, I saw that you died.
Right.
You know, there's no way to stop that. But in an accident situation, there is.
Right.
The way.
But even so, even if you see that accident happening, I mean, how do you approach somebody with that? I mean, my only suggestion to her would be, well, you mention to somebody that you have, you know, some psychic ability
All right.
You saw an event, and you ask them if they are interested, you know.
Well, that would be the way to approach it. But
yeah.
Here's my other question. If she's not getting details on the accident, like she's just saying, I don't know, you were in a car. Well, you could be in somebody else's car. You could be in your car. It could be tomorrow. It could be a month from now, whatever. What, do you just never get in a car again? You know, if she were getting sufficient information so that the person could do something about it, then I would say, yeah, approach the person and ask if they would like to know. But if it's information that's inadequate for the person to be able to change the course of history, keep your mouth shut, because
yeah.
You're only going to get them all bent out of shape.
Right. And I could see, like, in the society that we're in, it's a no-win situation, because if you were to tell somebody, and if that person happened to pass, I could see people saying, well, somehow in their mind, you caused it by putting the thought out there.
Which we don't know
right.
would really be a possibility.
Yeah. You know, so it's a really ticklish thing. And it is important whether you the type of information that we get. Now, we know that you get information, but you don't get, you know, and you get this feeling when somebody's going to pass. You don't know who. You just get this feeling, and
right.
then somebody, almost always when you get a particular feeling like that, does, you know. But
right.
but you don't get enough information
to do anything about it. So
right.
it's just a wait and see kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've gotten information that was particular to me. Like for instance, I was in that state of mind where I was just relaxing, and I received a jolt coming from my right side and heard a voice say to me, you know, it's okay, everything's going to turn out all right, it was just a minor accident. And so the whole day I was worried. And then as it turned out, while I was driving, I must have drifted to the blocks, the Belgium blocks along the side of the road, and I felt that exact same jolt that I felt when I was in that state of mind. And it didn't hit anybody, it didn't hit another car, but it was that exact same jolt. So it was like a voice came along with it, almost like a warning thing, you know, like, it's okay, this is cool, I'm just letting you know that we're here watching out for you, maybe. I don't know what the message was, but the point is that we all are open, and I think as the people who are very much into this whole spiritualist concept, they are all saying that the veil is thinning and that we're all having more and more experiences, and I just write that off to that.
Mm. Well, what do you think of that? Like, for instance, in these people, like this woman, you know, that have these specific dreams, and then, you know, and the way she made it sound, it's usually like the day before, you know, the day they die. What do you think is happening? Is it just a case of precognition, so she's catching a glimpse of a future event, or somebody in the another realm, in the spirit world, or discarnate, is giving her that information? You know, is she just using her natural psychic abilities to see a future event, or is she a receiver of a message? You know, I mean, that's...
Well, I think if she were using her psychic abilities, she would be aware that we're in an awake state, but this is a dream. So something, and this is my own perspective on dreams, something or someone has to manifest that dream. Dreams are either a product of our own fears and worries, or they are visits from spirit entities on the other side. So if it's a visit from a spirit entity from the other side, then it's a dream. You know, it's not something she's in control of.
Right. And by visit, I mean, it doesn't have to be a physical visit where you recognize the person that's giving you the message.
Right.
It's just information that comes to you by some unidentified entity.
Right. And I think most of us, if we took the time once we got up in the morning and reflected on the dreams that we had, and we all have many of them, that we would get some sort of a telepathic value with that dream that tells us more about the dream and what was going on in the dream than we actually, quote unquote, saw while we were dreaming. So there's more to a dream than just what we see in our mind while we're dreaming.
Yeah, and there are various workshops and things where you can work, you know, with these dreams to try to fine tune it, you know, and practice lucid dreaming where you can get, you know, more information.
Which is an exciting concept, then.
Yeah. But, I certainly understand, how people would have trouble integrating that into their daily lives. So, it's something that we'll talk more about. I'm anxious to get to, we have a wonderful guest tonight, as you mentioned, Dr. Jane Katra. So we're going to go to a break.
And when we come back, we will hear more about the unseen world from our guest, Dr. Jane Katra.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Hello, my name is Lauren Halpern, and I'm a Reiki master. I enjoy bringing peace and inspiration to people. I conduct healing circles with inspiration, meditation, and Reiki at different community developments, religious institutions, and many other locations. People react so wonderfully to my events. For more information, please contact me, Reiki Touch by Lauren at 954-464-0087. That's 954-464-0087, or email me at laurenhalpern@gmail.com. laurenhalpern@gmail.com.
Hello, my name is Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death, heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
In, our guest tonight is Dr. Jane Katra. Our sponsor is Hugs from Heaven, and that's Hugs with a Z at the end, and they can be found on the web at www.hugsfromheaven.com. Bob?
And Jane Katra, she holds a PhD in public health from the University of Oregon, where she taught mind-body health classes in the 1980s. Dr. Katra has also practiced as a natural spiritual healer for the past 40 years, after receiving instructions in a near-death experience. She's the co-author with physicist Russell Targ of the books Miracles of the Mind and Exploring Non-Local Consciousness and Spiritual Healing, and The Heart of the Mind, and Dr. Katra is active in healing research. Her work has been featured in many publications. She's presented at numerous scientific conferences and spiritual organizations. A website is Jane Katra, that's JaneKatra.org. Welcome, Jane.
Thanks very much, Bob and Fran. I'm happy to be here.
And it's a pleasure to have you back with us again. It's been too long. You know, as I read more and more about you and about your work, you've really had an interesting life. you grew up in a scientific family. You've conducted research with a stellar group of researchers and scientists, and yet you have decades of work in the spiritual realm and as a healer. So as you look back, I mean, has it been difficult to balance the two, the science side with the spiritual side?
Oh, absolutely. I did lose my job once as a professor at the University of Oregon for being a healer in the community. The department chairman didn't want any quacks on the faculty. This was back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And yes, I had to grow into my own voice. I spent so many years looking to parapsychologists to tell me what I could believe was true. And it's only after I started really getting after-death communications from Elizabeth Targ that she in fact told me from the other side that her main contribution to the Parapsychological Association and mine was about after-death communications. And, you know, back when this started happening, most parapsychologists really weren't comfortable. They didn't want to be involved in after-death communications at all because, after all, parapsychology kind of means laboratory research that's repeatable by anybody who wants to do it. So I had to step into my role realizing that it was perfect. I didn't have a reputation to uphold. I could step out and talk about the evidence of the afterlife that I've had.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, it's my great joy to help other people in grief, as I have spent many years of my life in grief. I started having many people close to me die before I was out of high school. It had happened a lot, and now I look back and realize it was all in preparation for this very moment, really, for being able to talk about after-death communication.
And I know that is something that you feel to be part of a soul contract, you know, that you want to assure people that these after-death communications are indeed real, so to speak. You know?
Yes, I realized that the importance of my coming from a very intelligent and science-minded family, that gave me a framework for, and also being a professor, you know, having achieved getting a PhD, I had a base of knowing I was an intelligent person, and I knew how to do good research, I was science-minded, and I knew the reality of after-death communications, for instance.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, you know, people love to label others. So, you know, you're either a scientist or you're an experiencer, and you can't be both, you know.
Absolutely.
Somehow,
absolutely.
They feel that you lose your credibility if you start experiencing things.
True.
Yeah.
True. And I realize that we're now, I think the parapsychologist doing lab work had a very important role to play, and it was a time when that was very much needed, you know, when J.B. Rhind started lab research with psychic abilities, and you know, I look back and know that it was quite important that I worked with Russell Targ for 10 years doing remote viewing research, and that was great for the time when that was being done, and right now people are claiming their real life experience and standing up to the materialist scientism that says, you know, that consciousness is produced by our brains, and people are just knowing today, younger people especially, that they feel energy and that altered states of consciousness can happen, and that more and more young people, you know, are just knowing what someone like me had to unlearn science for a kind of an indoctrination for so many years, you know.
Mm.
People today don't have so much indoctrination that after-death communications aren't possible.
Mm. Now, you mentioned this, you know, before, and maybe we can get into this a little bit, we mentioned that you wrote two books with Russell Targ, and Russell's daughter Elizabeth, who is a doctor and researcher in her own right, you had a close relationship with her in the physical, and you continue to have close relationship with her. So tell us about some of the communications that you and Elizabeth continue to have.
I'd be happy to. And I'll try and talk about the type of communications that give the best evidence. And those are the ones where more than one person receives the communication at the same time. Communication where information is revealed that nobody on earth knows at that time. Prediction of events that are to come that nobody knows at the time. Certainly communication in a foreign language, unknown to the recipient. And this happened with Elizabeth. Movements of objects that many people see. And of course, cross correspondences where different people are involved in different communications that when you put them together, they complete an idea or, just go together. So it's not just one person having these experiences. And these are all the kinds of things Elizabeth was a master at in her communications to me. I'll say the very first one was a few hours after she left her body. She appeared in the bedroom with her father and me. We were 10 miles away from where she died, and it was about 3 hours after she died. And her vibratory field appeared in the bedroom about 8 feet above our heads. Russell and I both felt it was coming from the same place, and it was a vibrating love. You don't hear about this much. It was not words. I didn't hear words. I felt just an incredible vibrating love that put both Russell and myself into a state of ecstasy for probably 20 minutes. And then
wow.
We both felt when she was gone.
You didn't know that she had passed at the time.
Oh, yes. We had been with her. She had passed a couple of hours previous. We had been with her.
Yeah.
And, we left, she was in the house where we had taken her, was her mother's house. And we left that house and came back to Russell's house. So, yes, I had been with her. I had actually been with her quite a bit when she was sick. She was sick for about 3.5 months before she passed. And during that time, she would go in and out of coma a number of times. And I look back on it and realize she was giving me notice of what was going to be happening after she actually left her body, because she would come out of coma and have been unconscious for 3 or 4 days. And I would be standing next to her and she'd open her eyes and I'd say, Elizabeth, you've been gone for days. Where have you been? And she would say, that she'd been with her mother, and her mother had been dead for 3 years. I said, you're kidding me. I guess 4 years. Her mother had been dead 4 years. I said, your mother. I said, what did she look like? Did she look like a ghost? And Elizabeth said, Jane, she was more real than you are. And she said that she was working out all the stuff with her mother that she hadn't gotten to work out in this lifetime, because her mother had died suddenly. And, I was just amazed, you know. And then she would say, in fact, it's so real, I'm going to go back and be with her. And she'd close her eyes and go back into coma for 3 more days. And again, I was taking care of her, and I'd be standing beside her bed when 3 days later she'd just open her eyes and pick up the conversation with me exactly where we left off, as if there had not been any break in the conversation at all for her. And she continued to talk to me about the communication she was having with her mother. This was amazing to me, and I realized it was all a foreshadowing of our work that we would continue to do after she left her body. And I had realized years ago, years previously to this, that we must have incarnated together. She, her father, and myself, to do the work we did, because her father, of course, was known for remote viewing research, and Russell and Elizabeth totally believed in remote viewing, but they didn't believe in spiritual healing. They did not believe in distant healing. And as your listeners might not know, I have been given the gift of being a spiritual healer in 1994 in a near-death experience, and it was not something I wanted to do. I I came from a science-minded family. We didn't do religion. I did not want to be known as being a weirdo, unintelligent. And yet I did discover that I had healing ability. And the way I got brought into working with Russell Targ in remote viewing was that he had been diagnosed with a metastatic cancer in, I think it was 1992 or 91. And he had heard about me, and he called me up and asked me if I, as a spiritual healer, would work with him, because the doctors had told him there really wasn't anything they could do for him. He had tumors in various organs of his body. And I said I would certainly do my best. And he had a dramatic healing, which I discuss in Miracles of Mind, the first book we wrote together. And his family, his wife, from whom he was separated at the time, she had been a nurse, and Elizabeth was a doctor, and another son of both was a doctor. They did not believe in spiritual healing. And Elizabeth at that time told me she was going to prove that it was a misdiagnosis, that her father had had a misdiagnosis. I had not done a spiritual healing, and she was going to do the research and prove that spiritual healing didn't exist. And of course, this was all part of what we came here to do together. And she did the research with men with AIDS in San Francisco, totally double-blind research with some men receiving distant healing from a variety of 20 different healers of all different persuasions all around the country, people who were dedicated to being healers and were very experienced. And Elizabeth's research showed that six people in her control group died. I think it was five or six people in her control group died. But all the people receiving healing, they lived. And that was just one variable that was robust. She repeated the research with better, tighter protocols, and again was astounded at the robust effect of the men receiving healing. And at that point, she decided she wanted to become a healer. And
when Russell was healed, did he was he sold?
He wasn't really comfortable that he'd had a healing either, although we both remember the evening where a palpable pink energy filled the room. It was the first time I was in his presence and did healing. We both had an astounding experience, which I don't really have time to go into too much, but he was put directly asleep, and he slept for probably 15 hours in a row, and he had not been sleeping well at all. He felt that that it was very likely he had a misdiagnosis. But he always said that I for sure saved his life, because I kept him from starting chemotherapy, which he was sure would have killed him. Back then, they didn't have any idea what kind of chemotherapy to give him for tumors in your liver and your pancreas, but they had to offer him something. And in the process of my working with him, he's just started feeling better and better and looking better. And he had to, various things kept happening with the doctors, where they kept putting off the surgery what they wanted to do. And I knew that it was a sign that we were given more time to work. Anyway, there came a point when he just had to decide whether he was going to go back and have the biopsy that they wanted him to have or not. And he's a natural bleeder. I hate to be giving his personal information out over the phone if he's listening. Hope you don't mind, Russell. But anyway, he had to just decide whether he was going to go back or not. He felt good, and by this time we had been having a healing circle for him every week with some parapsychologists, including Elizabeth and Jeff Mishlove. At any rate, he just never went back, and he's alive and well today. And I don't know how he really feels about the healing. I know he's come to agree that I've had after-death communications from Elizabeth. At first, he was not comfortable with that, but she gave such good evidence that he now does believe it.
Yeah. Well, we know he does, and I know he let us reprint the account with the Russian syllables in one of our newsletters. So tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, I'm happy to. That's one of the best stories. The one time that I had cooked a brunch for Elizabeth's husband, and Russell and myself, we were gathered in the house where Elizabeth had died, and Mark, her husband, pulls out this letter that he had gotten from a very close friend of Elizabeth who'd actually been her therapist. And the letter was talking about a dream that the woman had had. The woman's name was Kate, and she said that Elizabeth kept chanting to her over and over again the same nonsense syllables. And these syllables were, and the woman had written them down. The woman said that Elizabeth woke her up from her dream and kept chanting these syllables so that she could write them, get them down carefully. And she said Elizabeth just kept saying them over and over again. And Kate knew they were important, but she had no idea that they were anything but nonsense syllables, and the syllables were ya, ti, ba, vi, shu. Ya, ti, ba, lu, blue. Yaz, ds. Yaz, ds. And then ya, ti, ya, vi, shu. On and on like that. And Mark had handed me the letter and said, Jane, why don't you read this letter out loud so we can all hear it at the same time? So I was reading these syllables out over and over again. And Russell all of a sudden said, wait a minute, Jane, read those again. And so I read them again. And he said, those aren't nonsense syllables. He said, that's Russian. That's Russian. And Elizabeth had gotten her master's in Russian translation at Stanford before she entered medical school, and was proficient in Russian, and so Russell said, those syllables mean, I see you, I love you, I'm here. I see you, I love you, I'm here. And so we consider that Elizabeth got a total naive person to speak Russian. And it was amazing. I do feel that Spirit masterminded the fact that we were all together and that I was asked to read the letter out loud. I mean, had I not read the letter out loud, Russell would have never realized that they were Russian syllables. And yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is incredible. Also, I mean, it shows so many things it can communicate from these other realms. You can imprint the different languages to make people understand, you know. I mean, there's no language barrier in spirit. And like you said, it does certainly seem like people in spirit can coordinate things, or as you put it, mastermind events to have them all come together and in such a dramatic
way. Yeah,
that
really was amazing.
Yeah. So
I mean, it was just sort of chancy that I was asked to read the letter out loud. It was that, you know, that letter had just arrived the day before. It was brand new, just that morning or something. I can't remember.
Right. And if you were Elizabeth, as smart as she was, and trying to come up with a way to make all believe beyond doubt that it was her, she sure came up with a good way, didn't she?
Oh, she had many, many ways. As I say, the other categories, she, in fact, you know, she told me she wanted me to write a book about it because she said jokingly that she had done just as well as F.W.H. Myers had done in his cross correspondences, and she darn well wanted me to write about it. And I've just been lazy, you could say, and not really putting them together in a book. But I would like to tell you about a time when she predicted something that was going to happen. When she showed up in the Duke Medical School cafeteria when I was sitting at a table with a doctor from Duke Medical School and two PhD professors, one of whom was a nursing professor, And I'd just been introduced to the other two people. The doctor was my friend. And the woman sitting across from me at the table, the nursing professor, said, "Now I want you to understand, I am not a medium, but there's a spirit here who really wants to talk to you." And she was looking beyond me, like behind me, and I turned around in my chair and I looked and I said, "Who are you talking to?" And I turned around and I said, "Who are you talking to?" And she says, "I'm talking to you." And I went, "You're talking to me?" I said, what do you mean? And she says, "Dear, there's a spirit here who is really trying hard to communicate with you. She's standing behind you." And I turned around and looked. She said, "No, dear, you can't see her, but I can see her." And she said, "She's pushing her fingers from both hands as if she's trying to push something into your head. She's standing behind you." And she says, "She is so frustrated. She is unable to put information directly into your head. She's been trying to communicate to you directly without the help of a medium. And she is unable to do it, and she's very frustrated. And she says she wants you to know she's going to be back, but she is going to have to go somewhere and learn how to communicate to you directly without a medium. And she's going to be gone for a while, but she's telling you now that she'll be back. And you remember that she told you this. She's going to be back communicating with you again." Well, this happened in August. She had died in July of 2002, and I did not, I about choked on my veggie burger, as did the other two men at the table. We didn't know what to think, and I did not believe in such things. I certainly did not think that such a thing would happen to me. I was just confounded, you know, I was just confused. And anyway, you know, time went on. And I kind of forgot about it because I really didn't know what it meant. But sure enough, at the end of March of the following year, 2003, I was sitting in the audience in an auditorium. And at the end of the talk that we gathered to hear, as a matter of fact, it was at the Rhine Center in Durham. Everybody was emptying out the room, and the man in front of me just stayed seated, and he didn't turn around, but he just stayed in his seat. And I was at the very back row of the room, exhausted, because I just arrived in town about an hour before the lecture had started. I was exhausted. I'd been driving for hours from Washington, D.C. And I wondered why this man, why did he stay sitting there? And finally he turned around, and he started to blush and stammer, and he said, "Ma'am," he said, "I'm kind of an amateur medium." And he just said, "There's a spirit here who really wants to talk to you," in his southern language, you know. And I said, "What?" And he said, "There's a spirit here, and she is so intense, as Elizabeth was, and she really wants to talk to you." And then he said, and then he turns around and he talks to her and says, "Okay, now I've told her. Okay, will you let me alone?" And then he turns back to me and he says, "Ma'am, would you like it if I just went ahead now and left you alone?" And I said, "No, tell me more." And then he began to give me evidential evidence of things that only Elizabeth and I had discussed. Mm.
That is another powerful way. I've got some thoughts on that, but we have to go to a break, we're going to continue with that. I wanted to ask you something about that specific incident.
Okay.
So we'll be back. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org. winbridge.org.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
You are just tuning in. Our guest tonight is Dr. Jane Katra. Our sponsor is Hugs from Heaven, and that's Hugs with a Z at the end. And they can be found on the web at www.hugsfromheaven.com. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Did you know that you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% not-for-profit organization, without sending us a single pretty penny? When shopping on the internet, think of us before you go to Amazon.com, and instead go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and use the Amazon link to get to Amazon. Don't worry, there's a link on every page of our new website. And if you add that one simple step to your shopping, a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart will generate a donation from Amazon to us. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? Not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. Do it now. Sign up with iGive. It's free. Name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. And just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,400 online stores. Ones that you're already shopping at, like Adobe, Fandango, J.Crew, Yoga Associates, or Zales. And one last thing, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or need another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holiday of the Earth raffle is up and ready for future winners. To get those tickets, The link is available on our brand new website, and please be generous as these two raffles each year help us fund our very basic programs, including the new website. In this raffle, you can win one or more one-hour phone readings with one of our certified mediums, Neil Zapowski, Renee Buck, Renata Santarelli, Lee Ashley, or Bobby Allison. It's only $5 a chance. And a secret tip for our listeners, as of this morning, only 43 people have entered this raffle. You do the math. Our annual grief retreat is set for the weekend of July 25th to 27th back at the wonderful guest house in Chester, Connecticut. We have also added on a day just for parents who have lost children. There are a limited number of rooms at the retreat, and they are already filling, so make your decision to attend soon. If you'd like to save money, we can put you into a double or triple with others of the same gender who will be attending. Reservations can be made via the event page on our website. And finally, many of our listeners already know that this month marks our 10th year as a 501c3 not-for-profit organization serving the world in our mission to prove that life continues even after the physical body dies. In celebration of this event, we are revisiting our very first event with a 10-year view on the current research that supports the existence of an afterlife. Please join us on July 29th at Long Island University, where Dr. Piero Calvi Parisetti will present The Afterlife, a Scientist's View, and will be followed by a demonstration of spirit communication for those in attendance by Forever Family Foundation certified medium, Laura Lynn Jackson. Back to you, Bob.
Okay, and we're back with the Dr. Jane Katra. The website is Jane, J-A-N-E, Katra, K-A-T-R-A, .org. Jane, before we went to break, you were relating how Elizabeth was trying. She said she had to go somewhere to learn how to communicate with you. And I found that interesting because we get asked this all the time, you know, how come my loved one's not communicating? And I always suspected what Elizabeth said to be the case, that people, I think, make a mistake that those in the spirit realm automatically become experts in communication. I mean, it must be a process that they have to learn. I mean, do you agree with that?
I do agree. I think it's similar also to those of us here. I mean, we have special mediums who are very sensitive to picking up the vibratory communications from spirits, and most of us have to go to mediums to communicate with our loved ones. And the more I've read about historical communications that have come from spirits through mediums, I do believe that the people on the other side have to go to a medium as well to be able to communicate with us here. And there's usually four people involved. So yes, I don't know any more than what I've told you, that she did say she had to sort of go somewhere and learn how to do it. And I guess it was 7 months later, she had learned how to communicate with me through whoever was standing in front of me. And many times it also was somebody that I had a conversation with who then left. And in one case, the woman went back to Norway and emailed me and said she had the very profound, experience of Elizabeth standing beside her and dictating to her, and this was a sort of a cross correspondence, because that man I just told you about, who had been sitting in front of me in the auditorium, after Elizabeth had spoken to me through him that day, he called me up a few days later. I was in Durham at the time, and he said that he had a dream, and Elizabeth had come to him in his dream and told him to call me and tell me she was going to be proving to me that she existed. And he said she told him that she was going to touch me. That's how she was going to prove it. And I got all excited and I said, oh gosh, touch me where? And the medium was sort of channeling at the time. And he just said, she says she'll touch you on your arm, on your upper arm, on your upper right arm. And he said, and on the top of your head, on your head. And I said, oh, wow. Oh, cool. I just said, wow, when is she going to do it? And he says, oh, she's laughing. She said, oh, she's not going to tell you. That would ruin all the fun. It'll be a surprise. So, what happened in the weeks following is a number of people, had experiences, people who I didn't know, people who had never heard of this prediction would have a very profound experience of somebody squeezing their upper arm or pulling their hair up. In fact, one woman was driving into town and felt fingers tickling the top of her head, and she looked in her rearview mirror, and a tuft of her hair was pulled right straight up, right in front of her eyes. She was so freaked out, she went to the resident medium at the Rhine Center and told her, and the resident medium, who also didn't know me, said, oh, that's a relative of Jane Catra's, you should tell her. So that, in addition, a woman that I'd met at the Rhine Center who had gone back to Norway emailed me and said, she didn't know anything about how Elizabeth had predicted she was going to touch me. She said, I have the profound experience right now that Elizabeth's standing beside me and she is squeezing over and over my upper right arm. And, she's telling me to email you and tell you this. So that's kind of a cross correspondence that, that was great evidence. But,
I wanted to ask you, I mean, it seems to me that after death communication and the healing work that you do are related. I mean, if the theory is that we have different frequencies and vibratory properties in these different realms of existence, I mean, isn't that similar to heal as a healer? Do you?
Yeah.
Aren't you reading somebody's frequency or vibration?
When I'm doing healing, I am not reading their frequency. I am letting my concept of higher power frequency, which is a frequency of total love and universal consciousness, I am totally letting that frequency use me. I am not, and my mind has to be still for that. I am totally loving. I'm just totally loving. But do we have time for me to tell you that experience I have definitely felt the spirit of Elizabeth Targ, who I want to remind you was a dedicated healer, who on her deathbed had been crying with me and saying that she never got to finish her life. She never got to be a spiritual healer like she wanted to be because she had been a psychiatrist, and that she just wasn't done with her life. And I had told her, Elizabeth, I know you're not going to die. I knew by that time that we don't die, but she did not know that. She had been sort of raised, she was a Buddhist pretty much, and she believed that you just dissolve into nothingness when you die. And I said, I know that someone who's a passionate healer as you are, that I know that those passions continue on when we die. And that I said, I tell you, you can use me, Elizabeth, in any way to do healing. You can work through me. And I said, and I had said, please let me know that you do exist because I'm sure you will. And so, one of the more profound stories about when she used me in doing healing, I can feel her vibration. It's in addition to, let's just say, when God uses me, it's a very intense extra energy that makes me cry. It's so intense when she shows up. She doesn't do it as much anymore, but, years ago, I got a email.
No, Jane, we're going to have to wrap up.
Oh,
unfortunately,
we don't have time to talk about it. Okay.
But we, people can read, there are so many of these extraordinary experiences, and you can go to Jane Catra, JaneKatra.org and read, more about this, and also, two wonderful books that she co-wrote with Russell Targ, Miracles of Mind and The Heart of the Mind. Jane, thanks so much for being with us. Hope we can continue this at another time.
And I totally agree, and thanks very much for having me on. And for anybody out there in grief, I hope I've been able to help.
Thank you.
And anybody who's fearing death, I think it's a wonderful adventure. Okay. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Leanne Ashley, David Mello, Phyllis Alexander, Betty Alexander, Ann Hutchinson, John Cahali, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Kimberly Savager, Rachel S., Jeanette Davia, Andrea O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Marianne Pierschka, Laura Prisco, Stanley Mullen, Julie B., Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Barbara Petillo, David Hayes, Rita Springer, Eileen Lafata, Mark Farron, Wendy Lippo, Vicky Steffi, Barbara Russell, Tim Donahue, Francis Mastracco, Jean Lash, Joel Armon, Philip McPhee, Tracy Lee Nash, Rita Dwyer, Gina DiNonato, Magnus Scott, Trueb, and Chip Reichenthal, and Tom Donahue. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of love through loving thought by praying like this, to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.